Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. And with me today, Kelly Goumont.
How's it going? I was hoping for a better introduction from Doc Brown today. You know?
All right. And with us today, coming from a place where we need no roads, Kelly Goumont. How is that?
That's much better. And for those of you playing along at home, happy Back to the Future Day.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
And also with us from Doc well Brown. In the future, our own Doc Brown, John Martellaro. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. I'm fine. Very good.
Awesome.
And part two of the A-Team is arrived on schedule.
Everything is as it should be. Mm-hmm. And hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Drobo, which is awesome. We'll be talking about them soon. And Kelly, you mentioned that it's Back to the Future Day. So everyone, fire up your iPhone or get it close to your speakers. Hey, Siri, happy Back to the Future Day. And what I'm hoping is that everyone's iPhone just gave them an awesome message. And if not, go ahead and try it yourself, because Siri has some things to tell you today.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyhow, hey, how about if we talk about bad life choices?
Let's.
And by bad life choices, there is an Apple employee, worked at an Apple store in New York, that... decided that the best thing he could possibly do with his time was to recode Visa and American Express gift cards and prepaid debit cards so that they appeared to have all kinds of money on them, and then use those to buy legit Apple gift cards in the stores. So he managed to buy almost $1 million worth of these cards. And then there was someone that he was working with that in this criminal endeavor that was buying the cards off of him, $200 for every $2,000 worth of cards. And he had been doing this for several months. And then Apple started noticing the
anomaly, I'm guessing.
Yes, the anomaly, because the bogus credit cards and debit cards that were being used were now coming up as rejected charges because, of course, they weren't legit.
Great.
Which means that there were all these gift cards that were trackable that were showing up as not properly paid for and part of a fraudulent activity. So this guy ends up getting caught. He ends up getting arrested. In his possession, when he was caught, he had $2,000 worth of Apple gift cards and like 51 Visa and American Express cards that had been altered to appear as if they had money on them.
You know what amazes me about this, guys, is that ever since 9/11, there's been this tremendous focus on crime detection, terrorist detection, surveillance, security on the internet, CSI activities, you know, a culture of, you know, picking up a hair at a crime scene and matching DNA.
The CSI effect.
Computer, yeah. CSI effect, police investigations, surveillance. There's this whole culture of crime detection and management. What amazes me is that somebody thinks they can just get away with something like this. Like, aw, shucks, the computer's never going to notice. You mm-hmm. know, I can get away with this and I'll be rich. It just amazes me.
Yeah, well, and this guy wasn't exactly rich. I mean, he was making some nice money because he mm-hmm. was getting $200 for every $2,000 worth of cards. But he certainly wasn't making enough money off of this to make it worth the penalty he's going to end up facing. And he's looking at potentially 15 years in prison for this.
You mentioned in the pre-show, Jeff, there was another effect that's going to happen to this guy.
Oh, yeah. This is not going to reflect well in his next employee evaluation.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't see a raise in his future.
Sadly, no.
No. Now, okay, so here's where he could cut down on his potential prison time. And I think it's safe to say he's going to have prison time. But he could reduce it some if the DA's office decides to do some sort of deal with him to get in exchange for giving information about who it is that was buying the cards
from. Oh yeah, the contact, yeah,
right. And so he may be able to reduce his sentence some by doing something like that. And then if that pans out, okay, well, now maybe he's down to like 10 years, 12 years, something like that. But yeah, this is not good. And this is a perfect example of why embarking on a criminal endeavor is probably going to turn out very poorly for you. And yeah, when you have a criminal scheme that seems perfect or too good to be true, you've overlooked something, and it's going to bite you hard.
Very hard, yes.
Yeah, and in this case, 15 years worth of prison, potentially hard.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah. So anyhow, there you go. Fair warning, public service announcement. Don't steal. Stealing's bad. Okay.
No, the other thing this makes me think of is that there's got to be a time when all these plastic credit cards go away. You know, the bank holds your account. The bank authorizes your smartphone. The smartphone does an encrypted payment. Nobody ever carries around any more plastic credit cards. There's no more stolen numbers. This has got to disappear too. It's just a signpost along the way.
I had a moment where I thought about this very recently. I was adding all my things to Apple Pay because, again, success, late to the party with Apple Pay. But the thing to me that I was thinking about as I was doing this was, at the same time, I had a credit card that expired and I got a new one. And I was cutting up the old one, and I was cutting it up into these little tiny pieces like I've been told all my life you have to do. You don't just toss the credit card in the trash can because somebody could get it and use it and whatever. Right. So I get about halfway through cutting it up, and I stop and I think, why am I doing this? I'm just going to get a letter in another couple of months that somebody else gave away my credit card data and I have to get a new card anyway. Mm-hmm. So what does this matter to me? And I actually had a moment where I thought about how much better it is that I can use Apple Pay because I don't have to have that credit card, because it's a lot harder to steal the Apple Pay number. And even if you do get the number out of somebody's phone, you can't do anything with it without the Touch ID second piece of the authentication. And how much nicer chip and PIN would be if we could get that here instead of chip and sign, and on and on. And I had this moment of like, it would be a lot better if financial transactions went this way. And then the other day I went somewhere to pay with my phone, and the woman said, oh yeah, we have the thing where you can pay with your phone, but only if you have a Samsung.
That's interesting.
Like, seriously?
Yes. And I went, did I fall into an alternate universe? What's happening right now? And she said, yeah, it works with the Samsungs if you have one of those. And then she goes, and then my hand to God, she said, oh, you just have an iPhone.
Ooh.
Wow.
Attitude.
And I'm like, I actually need these things or this transaction would end right now. I'm having this moment of like, why isn't this woman wearing a goatee so that I know I'm in the mirror universe?
What shop was this? Was this a place where she had control and had attitude that affected her customers?
No, it was just somebody checking people out. And I wish I could remember where it was, but I remember thinking, I have no way around making this transaction, so I have to do this. Otherwise, I would have just left all my stuff there and been like, yeah, no, thank you. But it was very funny to me. Oh, you just have an iPhone.
Well, you know, I read it costs the banks $1 to create a smart card and mail it to you. And they'd sure like to eliminate that. Because you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Well, and particularly given that in, say, the last 18 months from June of last year to now, I believe I'm on my fourth or fifth completely different Visa number as a result of getting a letter in the mail that says,
I don't even get
the letter in the mail. It's just new cards show up with different numbers on them, and I'm supposed to just presume I know what happened.
Oh, you know what happened.
Well,
at this point.
Usually, in the olden days, there'd be a letter that said new cards are on the way to you with completely different numbers because data breach. Okay.
Think how much that costs.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now they don't even send that. They just go, here's your new card. We're not going to tell you who it was. And I'm like, what? So, yeah, I was actually having a moment where I was thinking about financial transactions. And then another friend of mine just got a coin, the card like Dave Hamilton got, where you load it up and you just hit the button the number of times for the right card you actually want to charge.
Mm-hmm.
And has been trying that out and said that it was super convenient and worked really well because, again, it's an encrypted transaction. So I also thought that was kind of an interesting way to kind of get around that problem. It's something I feel like, particularly in the United States, because we're only just at chip and sign instead of chip and pin like we should be, which helps eliminate a lot of that stuff. To me is sort of, I feel like this isn't the end of this conversation. There's still going to be something else that's going to happen. And it's going to take something that's like a Target or a Home Depot level breach for this to be something that I think gets taken seriously.
Well, you know, actually, in some cases, Kelly, chip and sign is an advantage in restaurants because you're at a restaurant, you give your credit card to the server and she puts it into the system and does the encrypted transaction. Then you sign the credit card receipt.
Right.
So it's really great when I have someone else's credit card at a restaurant.
Yeah, that's even better.
I think chip and sign is horrible. I think it's pointless. I see no value in chip and sign over swipe and sign.
Well, if they brought a little widget out to the table, you know, and you could, with one Wi-Fi, and you could insert your card and enter a PIN, that'd be great. But I don't think the restaurants are going to do that.
No, you mean like they do in Europe?
I was going to say they're doing it already somewhere, yeah.
Did they bring a little thing to your table in Europe?
Yeah. They don't want your card. They hold out the little thing, and you know they give you the little portable scanner. You scan your card.
Yeah, it's all you.
Yeah, it's all you. Yeah.
Yeah. From what I've read, you know, America's restaurants are not going to go for that.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, America's gas stations have been able to get an extension, so they don't even have to start worrying about this until I think it's like 2017.
Yeah, but gas stations are one of the worst places because suspicious card readers are targeted there.
Yeah.
The fake ones. Yeah.
Anyhow, hey, John, as you say, return from subroutine.
Yes.
I was going to say, let's talk about some good life choices for a minute.
You know, Kelly, it's like you read my mind because you can make good life choices, and our sponsors help make that happen. This week's sponsor is Drobo. Yay. And Drobo is the company that makes the real easy to use hard drive storage RAID systems that you can just pop on your desk. You don't need to be an IT manager to figure out how to use these. You just need to be able to figure out how to get a box open. And you set the thing on your desk, you plug it in, and away you go. And I want to point out, thank you to the listeners that caught that I've been saying lightning port instead of thunderbolt port all week. I didn't even realize I was doing it myself. Anyhow, my Drobo connects to my thunderbolt port because I have the 5D. Now, the 5N is pretty cool because that one connects to your network, and then you can pop other apps on it and let it do other things for you, like act sort of like your own cloud server, or you can put Plex on there and turn it into your home media management system. And when you get a Drobo, you pop in however many drives you want, and it just dynamically configures everything so you don't have to think about it. If a drive fails, you pop it out, put a new one in, and you get to keep going. You don't lose your data. You don't even have to shut anything off. It just works. And I love the simplicity of my Drobo. I love that they've been able to evolve and improve over the years. So that, you know, the concerns we had when Drobo first came out, it just felt kind of clunky and slow. That's not an issue anymore. These are really fast. Like mine is fast enough that I've actually done video editing straight from a Drobo without any latency issues at all. So that was pretty impressive.
Now, and I just want to point out, as a person who does a lot of software support, that the best thing to me about the Drobo is here's the amount of tech support and like IT knowledge that it takes in order to work on your Drobo. You look at it and all the lights are green, you're done. There's a little light next to each drive. And then when one of those lights turns yellow or red, you go find a special on a hard drive. You buy yourself another hard drive. And then you come home and you pop out the one with the yellow light or the red light. And then you pop in the new one and the light turns green again.
Hot swapping.
And you move on with your day. That's the entire process.
I've had to do it, and it works beautifully.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's absolutely awesome. Okay, now the Drobo Mini, if you need to have that storage, but on the go, the Drobo Mini is actually a portable thing, so you can do that too. Hey, now, we also, because the people at Drobo love us, have a discount for you guys. So, yeah, so what you need to do is go to their online store. So it's drobostore.com. And then use the discount code TMO100. And that's going to get you $100 off a Drobo Mini, a Drobo 4-Bay, or a Drobo 5N. So that's a really sweet deal. So go check them out, drobostore.com. Use the discount code TMO100. Get yourself $100 off a sweet Drobo deal. And thank you, Drobo, for being our sponsor. Okay. The other thing I wanted to look at today, and Kelly, this mm-hmm. I think has a special interest for you.
Yes.
And this is the whole thing with 3D touch and force touch, because you were kind of on the bleeding edge of this for me, because you
yes.
ended up getting one of the new MacBook Pros with the force touch built into the trackpad, like when it came out.
Basically, yeah. It was an interesting bit of timing on my part. It was sort of unintentional. It wasn't like I had been waiting for this or heard about it and then went, yeah, I totally need a new computer. It just sort of happened that everything at my house ended up at this crossroads where it was my computer was the computer I was using at the time earlier this year was still new enough to be a completely viable machine. And so at long last, and by long, I'm not kidding. It's taken about 18 years to convince Mr. Kelly to become a switcher. He now uses my laptop, my previous laptop, and then I bought a new one. It was about time for him to buy a new computer anyway, and it was sort of a one will get you two situation. So I got a new machine, and I was excited about the trackpad, not because of the force touch. This was the thing that really brought me to the trackpad was the way that they've redone it. The old one was described as the diving board, where you could really only click at the bottom. Like there was really no clickability mm-hmm. at the top of the trackpad. So you have all this space and it's really only the bottom third that's actually useful, because clicking in the middle doesn't ever really get you anywhere. So I was really interested in the fact that all the corners would click and everything, and I didn't have to reach as far, because I like to trackpad. If I'm using my laptop without anything external connected to it, I like to use my thumbs on the trackpad. So it was nice to not have to pivot all the way down to the bottom in order to click. So for me, that was the best thing about this new trackpad, because I kept waiting for there to be force touch stuff that happened with it, and it never really did. There's not a lot of haptic feedback from anything. There aren't apps that give you any of that sort of help. And so for people who don't know, the force touch trackpad, when the computer is on, there's sort of this mid-level click, and then there's like a deep click. So if you push on it, it's sort of like the focus button on a camera. When you get to the middle, there's like a point where you notice, you know, like if you're on most digital cameras, if you half press the shutter button, you get like the autofocus, and then you can push it the rest of the way. And this is sort of what the trackpad was like on my computer. So I was really excited to see what people were going to do with it, and people did nothing. So for all this time, I've had this trackpad that has like this awesome deep click that works really well. If you need it for things, and what really trips me out about the trackpad is if the computer's off, there's just the one click mm-hmm. on it. It doesn't have that second level of clicking. So I kept waiting for people to use it for things, and I kept waiting to see what kind of mind-blowing stuff developers were going to come up with. But since this model of this machine was the only one that had it, and then I think John does the new
yes.
MacBook, the USB-C MacBook. Yep. It yep. has Force Touch as well.
But now we have the new Magic Trackpad 2.
Right. And I'm hoping that, and what my hope is that now that lots more people have access to this same force touch technology by connecting this trackpad to any old computer, and additionally, a lot of people have had exposure to 3D touch on iOS,
mm-hmm.
Which is right click for your phone, and is amazing, and I love it so, so much. if it were possible to have worn out a force touch action, I would have worn it out on the phone, because if you force touch on the phone, it gives you the top three contacts. And whenever I need to actually call people, those are the people I need to call. There's really only three of them. And so that's...
I'm not one of them.
Sadly, no. Because you call me.
I just checked. Funny thing is, right now you are one of them on my phone.
Because you... See, John, it's because you call me. That's why you don't show up at the top of that list. All of my outgoing calls tend to be to about three people. And messages has the same sort of thing. Force touch messages. And it shows you three people based on an algorithm I don't quite understand. But they're always the three I want to see. So that's helpful. I'm really hoping that once people see the kind of cool stuff you can do with 3D touch, that it will be one of those things that sort of comes back around to macOS from iOS, where people look at it and go, I wonder if there's a way that I could implement this in something I'm doing on the Mac. I think that would be amazing, and I'm really excited to be able to actually do something with this awesome trackpad I've had for the better part of a year that feels great and works really well. And I would really love if some of this additional clicking was actually helpful to me in some way.
All right, so Kelly, we're out of time, but what I'm thinking is that maybe we can use the show today to your benefit. So here's a call to action. Okay. Listeners, if you know of apps for the Mac that are taking advantage of the Force Touch trackpad, let us know. And developers, if you're working on apps that are going to take advantage of the Force Touch trackpad, let us know.
Please.
You can leave comments on Twitter. That would be TMO Daily. You can send emails to observations@macobserver.com, and I'll make sure Kelly sees those, because this is stuff Kelly wants to know about. You can also leave comments in the show notes. And of course, I'm always checking there too. So let us know what you have found that does work with the Force Touch feature, or is going to work with the Force Touch feature soon.
Now, I just want to ask Doc Brown really quick. I know we're out of time. How have you enjoyed the trackpad compared to your previous trackpad experiences? Because I know you have the new MacBook. That's you, John. Great Scott. I've woken him from a nap.
I'm sorry. I didn't catch on that one. I have not used it a lot on the MacBook.
Force touch, but just the difference in the trackpad, the fact that it all clicks the same as opposed to the old diving board style.
Oh, that I like. Yeah.
Yeah. But,
I haven't had much experience with apps on the MacBook that exploit that.
Yeah. That's been my experience. So,
well, one of the things, I know we're out of time too, but I talked to a developer the other day and he said, it's just tough keeping up with Apple's yearly release of OS X, let alone add new stuff.
That's probably true. That's sort of why I was hoping that this would be the time that this would happen, is because there wasn't a whole lot of newness in El Capitan. With Yosemite, we got all the continuity and the handoff and the new Photos app and like all these new vast ideas that sort of work all the way across the operating system. So I was sort of hoping that by sort of refining those features and maybe not introducing a ton of new stuff, that maybe this would be when people would finally get a chance to take a good look at Force Touch. So I hope that ends up being the case for us very soon. We'll find out.
That would be awesome. All right. Yep, we're totally out of time. So we have to go. Kelly, thank you so much for being here today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And John, Doc Brown, Mark Laro, thank you for being here too.
Certainly.
No, you should have said Great Scott. That would have been funnier. Anyhow, Drobo, thank you for being our sponsor today. Head over to drobostore.com and use the discount code TMO100 and get yourself an easy-to-use, really reliable, and pretty slick RAID system, right, for your desktop or your network. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.